Okay, let's go.
Yes.
Are you going to do that throughout the podcast? The coughing thing?
Yeah, probably. Sorry. Okay. Oh, you're just
I'm
annoying.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 9 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast, nearly into double digits.
It's exciting.
And many people have given us double digits over the years.
They have.
We're nearly into them. And episode 9 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast, a podcast for every Christian who's ever asked, is that it? My name's Nick Page.
And mine isn't.
Yes, I'm joined as ever by Joe Davis.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello.
Lovely to be with you again.
Yeah, lovely.
I was with somebody this weekend, and they said, are you the love child of Chris Packham and Jules Holland? Because your voice is a cross between Chris Packham and Jules Holland, which I thought was rather funny, because it is.
If I were their love child, I would be a lot younger than I am.
That's
but actually, people have said that about my voice. Yeah. I quite like both of those guys, actually. So, you know, if I could play piano like Jules Holland and knew enough about as much about birds as
Chris Packham,
whatever his doodah does.
Yeah, but you'd just be even more annoying then, and I'm not sure I could cope.
I am annoying, aren't I? I realised about the podcast last time that I actually edited it to make myself sound more insulting than I genuinely am.
You left out all the lovely bits.
I came across, I thought, quite mean.
Well, I hate to break it to you. But, you know, in the spirit of honesty and truth telling,
okay,
you are quite a mean git.
No.
Some of the time.
Somebody said to me the other day, we were talking about this thing about how actually the British, when you're really fond of somebody, you insult them. That's how you show your fondness, you see.
You must be very fond of me.
I love you a lot. And
it shows.
And she was saying, yeah, she said, I've got a friend who, and he's the most insulting person I know. And I know you. So I have apparently become like a unit measurement of insult.
You are the standard by which others are measured.
Yeah, we're one nick of insult, basically. And, you know, if you're insulting somebody really, oh, he's running at three nicks. That's hard. A hurricane.
So anyway, how are you and what have you been up to?
Right. I'm very busy. I've been doing a lot of writing. I've been planning some new books and I have been doing an article for a magazine, which we might talk about at a later date.
Oh, yes. What's that article on, Nick?
It might be on something called the Mid-Faith Crisis, Joe.
How extraordinary.
Might mention the podcast. Who knows? And I've been, doing a lot of other stuff. I feel quite tired, yeah.
Ah, well, don't worry. I'll carry the show. You sit back
good.
And enjoy
yourself. You've been very busy, haven't you?
Yes, it is a busy time of year, that's for sure. But I have also been to the cinema. In fact, last night was really funny. I went to see Sing. So Matthew McConaughey plays a koala. And it was a tremendous experience, life-affirming. But I did come out of the cinema and then within 20 minutes go into the cinema upstairs to see Hacksaw Ridge. And those are two quite different films.
What a great double bill
And
that
if
is.
I could live my life again, I would watch them in the other order, I think it's fair to say.
So Hacksaw Ridge is that Mel Gibson film about someone who is a conscientious objector, isn't it, in war.
It is both tremendously inspiring and very disturbing all at the same time. I mean, it certainly doesn't glorify war. It shows it in all its raw, gory, terrible detail. And it's horrific. It's horrific. But it's very inspiring story of a guy who, you know, a true story, I hasten to add, about a guy who selflessly decides that he will spend his life saving lives rather than taking lives. And it's, go see it. Brilliant.
Well, I'm not a big fan of Mel Gibson's film. They are very gory, aren't they?
The Passion of the Christ was quite gory, and there was the odd bit of gore in Braveheart, wasn't there?
Yes, I mean, the worst thing in Braveheart was his accent, I felt.
Well, that was horrific, yeah.
That was gratuitously offensive. Well, yes. Well, that's what a double bill: Sing and Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's great. Anyway.
Follow up next week. We'll go and see Mary Poppins and Saw 2.
That's great.
Ah, dear. Now, so should we have with this show? We ought to talk about this show because this is what we're supposed to be doing. We're going to do largely sort of feedback letters and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Good. So, shall we crack on, as they say?
Shall we?
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
go on then.
So first,
give me the hit me. With
okay. Let me hit you with Jim.
Okay,
so he said, very much loving your work with Mid-Faith Crisis, blah blah blah, I won't bore you with that bit, but one of my highlights so far was in episode 5 where you and Nick disagreed on something like that could happen. I think it was a difference of opinion about what the definition of church was. I was delighted to sense a small disagreement and fully expected it to blow up into an uncomfortable feeling between the two of you, and then became a passive aggressive exchange over the coming weeks, eventually leading to a full blown falling out, leading you each to start a new denomination cemented around your opinion of what church should be, then perhaps a war or two. However, I was disappointed to find you continually civilly whilst respecting one another, and then even celebrated Christmas together a couple of weeks later. A bit of a letdown, but does lead quite nicely to my question, which is, how should we disagree with one another in church but not let that matter?
I think there's a number of false assumptions in that. One, that I still respect you.
Yes, that was the most obvious one for me.
Yeah, I don't think I haven't respected you, I don't think, since that incident in 1996. I don't want to go in there.
Well, we can't for legal reasons.
No, we can't. I can't forget it, and I can't unsee it, Joe. I don't think I've mastered this at all. I don't find it hard to disagree with people, with the people I love and people I trust, you know, like yourself. Yeah. That's easy, actually. We can have a range of opinions.
Yeah,
I think.
Exactly.
I think it's more when you don't know the person so well and you don't, that there's a perhaps a mistrust of motives. That's difficult, I think.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, certainly in my own life, you know, I've realised that, you know, what I believe today, I didn't believe 5 years ago, and I certainly didn't believe 10 years ago or 20 years ago. In fact, I seem to be doing the opposite. Is it, the opposite of what you should be doing as a Christian. Mm. I started off knowing everything at the age of 16.
Yes, absolutely.
And I gradually realising that I know so very little. Every day I seem to know less. So I
think that's
to
absolutely
judge.
True. Yeah. I agree with that. And I think that people treat theology like brain surgery, one false step and you're dead. And it's not really like that.
No,
you know,
it's
perfectly open. But I think the problem comes where people aren't on that same playing field as you. So you might be sitting back all relaxed and going, yeah, look, it's no big deal. At the end of the day, we don't, you know, nobody's sure. We don't know this, we don't know that. But they're absolutely certain.
I know.
They do know. And they're not going to let up. So in the end, I think sometimes you just have to let those people go, really. I try desperately not to over-identify with my talks, as it were. You know, if you do a sermon and people come up and say, "Look, we didn't like that bit." You know, the swearing. Maybe I should cut that out. Anyway, they're not. You have to think. Well, they're not necessarily attacking me. It feels a bit like that.
No, they might be.
That's absolutely true. Now I come to think of it, they might be.
Yes.
No, you know, we like when you write books, people criticize your books, obviously, and it's very hard not to over-identify with our work and our expressions of ourselves, and not to take that personally. But if ever there was a time when we in the church needed to sort of respectfully disagree with each other and still hold unity, I think it's now.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Good question.
Yeah, good question. Yeah. Okay, so we've had an email from Jeanette. And you remember we asked people to write in with what they thought was the gospel. And she says this. In the previous podcast, you asked that we write in to share what is the gospel or good news and what it means to me. I think the good news is that we are valued and beloved by God, that the words spoken to Jesus by the Father at his baptism are applicable to me as well. This is my beloved son or daughter in whom I am well pleased. And the really amazing thing is that my belovedness doesn't take away from anyone else's belovedness. We are all the favourite child, which I just thought was
a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't really add to that. I've been sort of leading a series on spiritual formation in the church, And one of that is sort of addressing people's visions of God and
yeah.
who they think God is. And I should have recommended a book because there are some great books on this.
Yeah.
But to my mind, and I will recommend more books on this podcast, actually, because you witter on about films. So I'm going to go about what's important in life, which is books, obviously.
What?
But I think if you want to read a great book about love, I think you should read one of the most important spiritual formation books ever written, and that is The Velveteen Rabbit by Marjorie Williams, which was written many, many years ago. And you should love it, Joe, actually, because it's largely written for sort of, I don't know, six-year-olds, really. So it's okay. Right up your... There might even be a colouring-in version.
My level.
Absolutely brilliant.
And but then you'll be saying, oh, I've edited this so that it looks like I'm me. Excellent.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Velveteen Rabbit is all about a little soft toy that that wants to become real. He's desperate to become real. And he says to another toy, he says, what is real? And the other toy answers, real isn't how you're made. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real.
Oh. And yeah, says, I would does like it hurt? That. Yeah,
the would. Rabbit says, does it hurt? Sometimes, but when you're real, you don't mind being hurt. And it's all about good. This: how this rabbit becomes real through pain and through darkness, and it's absolutely brilliant. Seriously, I mean,
okay,
you know,
so
it's
all right, that's a good
book. Children's book, but it's a beautiful book. It's one of my favourite books and very profound.
Okay,
book,
yeah,
so. And, yeah. Well, thank you for that.
Okay, a more sobering one from our dear friend in the States called Troy, and he says. Well, I'll just read you a whole bit. Joe, you mentioned you had to do two services for young people that had taken their own lives. I'm sorry for you, for their families and everyone involved. That's how my son died. Suicide. He was 18 years old. Out of the blue. We had no idea it was coming. For the parents and families of those young people, it sends them on a very long and lonely journey through hell. There is no fixing it, resolving it, mitigating it. They have a bleeding stump from an amputation and it's not growing back. They, like me, are maimed for life. I wish them the best and that they can somehow walk with God through that valley of death. On to what's the gospel, and I think it relates, that the God and creator of all things came to us to prove that he does not keep score. Even if we take our own lives, he does not keep score. He continually says to all of us, come closer. Get nearer, take those sandals off and touch that which is holy. See the Trinity and come join in. And I just loved that last sentence. See the Trinity and come join in. And I wonder if that's not one of the best definitions I've heard of what the gospel is. See the Trinity and come join in. And I mean, that email just really touched me. And Troy, thank you so much for your other kind comments on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And thank you for being so honest. And he said we could share his story and his name. Our hearts are with you. But we appreciate the insight into the gospel that you've received through pain. And it sort of, in a weird way, takes us back to the Velveteen Rabbit love and... I do the way to love and the way to knowing what it is to be authentic and real.
That's an amazing email, and like Joe said, we really appreciate the honesty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the sense of grace in there as well. I think that sense of the light in the darkness, really.
Yeah. Yeah, that is really good. And then I've had an email here. It says, it's actually addressed to you. Dear Nick, why do you keep making out I'm fat? I'm the right weight for my height. People just don't appreciate I'm 9'6". And as the 100,000 people who came to my ordination would say, you are thin. These are alternative facts. Oh, sorry, that one's from me.
Yes, I did get that. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Alternative facts. What a world we live in.
It's a phrase I'm exploiting fully.
Oh,
okay.
Man.
Okay, so this is from Matt. talking about worship songs. He says, I very much enjoyed your exposing of song lyrics, which are poor and not well thought through. I realise how often I sing things I don't think about. However, please can you explain to me where you think the line is between poetic licence and poor lyrics, and how do you distinguish between the two?
So, well, I don't think it's an either or here, actually. I mean, I think the point is you can, you know, you want a bit of poetry in your songs, obviously. If poetry is done badly, then it's poor lyrics. I don't think it's about poetic license. I think it's about a lack of technique as much as anything else. I don't think people think enough. They're not disciplined enough. They don't test these things out, you know, and so they just sort of knock out the lyrics. And that's part of the culture that we're in. We don't, there aren't many songs with great lyrics anyway. So I'm not a big, I don't go into battle for worship songs or for hymns. I think worship songs have been an enormous blessing to the church, actually. Yeah. So I'm not anti them. I think it's just generally if there's bad technique, and mostly I don't think people are taught much about lyric writing or about poetry. Okay. You know, so I think you can get images that just don't work. So I'm not against poetic license.
So we're back on that. The Godhead, three in one, Father, Spirit, Son, the Lion and the Lamb, which just appears out of nowhere.
Yes. It's that, you know, it's kind of like a biblical Tourette's thing where they kind of have to cram everything. And suddenly in the middle of a song, you'll get a Bible phrase crammed in for no apparent reason. Why is it there? And just endless imagery. You know, obviously the Bible is full of poetic imagery. It's full of poetic license in that sense.
And it's good. As the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. I mean, that's a nice lyric, actually, isn't it, for a psalm?
Yeah, except that it mistakes the whole nature of that psalm. Because actually, why is the deer panting? The deer panting is, if you read the psalm, I think it's Psalm 42.
Ruining this for me.
The deer is panting because it's being hunted.
Ah.
That psalm is all about a man in turmoil. But we think it's, the deer is panting for the water. How lovely. Yeah. We'll just go for a swim.
Well, that's what
I thought. Get your antlers wet. You know, just because you can cram a lot of biblical imagery in doesn't make it a virtuous song.
A virtuous that's and biblical song.
No, yeah, but sure. It just doesn't make it a good thing. Now, we shouldn't get too upset. I think Sit Lightly, it's a bit like the disagreeing question. You have to kind of look for the best, I think, in what in these things, really. Heavens, I don't want to critique every line that somebody writes, because I, you know, if that same light was shone on my writings, I wouldn't survive very much. But I think you have to kind of look for the best and go in with goodwill on this kind of stuff.
Can I speak something to the mid-faith crisis thing?
Will you?
Yeah, if that's all right. Just because I think it's
can
important.
Can I stop
point.
You in any way?
No.
No, fair enough.
I think part of the mid-faith crisis is this awful, hellish deconstruction stage. And, you know, we can get careless with language and we can say things like, oh, this is rubbish or that's rubbish, or the preaching's not good or the worship's terrible. And by that, people mean songs, you know, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's very easy to get all snarky about all kinds of things. But I think one of the ways you know that the mid-faith crisis is passing is that you find a whole new way to re-engage with church, and it just doesn't have the emotional intensity or anger that your mid-faith crisis has, you know. So you know, on my good days I can go into church and I can sing, I'll sing this song, I'll enjoy it because it's you know, it's fun, and there's someone leading the worship on Satan's banjo, and you know, he's quite good, and you know, we're all having a good time. And actually, I know I could invest energy critiquing it and criticizing what's wrong with it, but I'm entering into the spirit. And in any case, if my brothers and sisters all around me are really enjoying this and finding this helpful, do you know what, I'll sing it to bless them, and it doesn't matter that it doesn't bless me. I just think it's an important statement to make. Don't stay in the anti phase for the rest of your life and become a grumpy old person. Feel it, understand it, you know, validate it, but move through it. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. Shall we move on?
Shall we?
Okay. Here is an email from Jeremy. And
he... This is Jeremy.
Oh, is it? Okay, sorry, Jeremy. He yeah, there is, were accents.
He is an actual Belgian.
Oh, okay. But he's in Paris, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But he's Belgian.
That's okay. Yeah,
make well, that absolutely
go.
Clear.
Yeah, well, thanks.
How you doing, mate?
Well, there you anyway, go.
Carry on.
Okay. So, yeah, he's from... Anyway, he likes the show, blah, blah, blah. He says... I'm just trying to cut out. It's quite a long email.
Yeah,
as you know. And then there's the whole, he says, conservative versus liberal thing. Why is the hell is so wrong with being liberal? Here in Christian circles, it's nearly a swear word. Actually, I don't really know what it means. Seems a liberal Christian is somebody who doesn't take every word of the Bible like something true. Is that it? Because I do believe everything in the Bible is true, but I don't understand everything as literal. And it's always been really freeing to me. I like to think of myself as a progressive Christian coming from a conservative background, but not quite a liberal yet. So nobody hates me completely, says in brackets. Which makes me, as very often, always living in this tension, the mess of life. So I just thought that's an interesting point, yeah. That line there, that he believes everything in the Bible is true, but he doesn't understand everything as literal, to which I would want to say amen.
Well, it's the Velveteen Rabbit. I think the Velveteen Rabbit is one of the truest things ever written. Do I think that the rabbit actually had a conversation with the horse? Nope.
Okay.
So truth, you know, there's different things of truth. I think a thing can be true on all kinds of levels. I think the Bible has something within it of intrinsic power that makes its truth deeper than that. But nevertheless, you know, all the time we hear stories and they that speak to us and that resonate.
Okay, Jeremy says, if somebody was to ask me what's so good about the gospel and the good news, I think I'd answer that some life concepts like forgiveness, love, freedom and grace have really transformed my life, and that repenting and turning away from bad things and destructive behaviour, brackets sin, has definitely been a blessing to me. Following Jesus is hard, but it does bear the best fruit I've ever seen, both in my life and other people. I nearly never mention the afterlife thing, which is definitely a stigma of my parents' generation way of sharing the good news. And if somebody was to ask me why I'd go to church, if it seems to annoy me so much, I'd answer that I think it's still important to spend time with people who are not exactly like you, and it teaches you to love everybody. Ha ha. Which I think is absolutely brilliant. And,
yes.
And importantly, you know, this is the way to avoid cynicism and becoming immobilized with deconstruction and what doesn't work and
I'm not sure
what I believe and everything. I mean, he's bringing it back to, do you know, the gospel. The gospel transforms people's lives, and the following Jesus will transform your life and will and transform
there's
other
a generosity
people's lives.
I think there as well, and I think that's kind of, and he's a lovely man actually, because I know him, but I think there's a generosity of spirit, and I think that's one of the things we've got to guard against. And so we've looked at worship songs, lyrics and all this kind of stuff. Cynicism's this corrosive thing that we can get into, and I think as you get older you do become cynical and grumpy about things, if you're a bloke certainly. And I mean, you know, I'm aware of that in my own life. You become defensive and grumpy, and it's everybody else's fault. So I think one of the answers to that is, I always say to people, is if you're going to get grumpy about something that matters.
Yeah, I've heard you say that. I love
so
that.
So get involved in a cause.
Yeah.
Do something. And I've been, what we're trying to do with these podcasts is make sure that they're not just Joe being all whiffly Californian and, you know, God loves you and you know, all that stuff. Yeah. You know, at Richard Rohr. You know, seriously. We're trying it's to make so sure rude. That it's not just a kind of, you know, abstract stuff about, you know, thinking
absolutely.
Nice thoughts. But there is stuff you can do. And we were trying to think about this week, and I don't think there's been a week better for us to get involved with something that matters.
Something that brings life. Something that saves lives.
Something that absolutely
saves lives.
Be a part
of something
good.
Yeah. So how should we do that?
Well, here's a thing. Find a cause that you care about. Think about a cause you care about and get involved with a charity or an organisation that does something about it. And that could be through active things that, you know, we've heard, for example, about suicide tonight. We've heard about dreadful things like that, mental illness. Well, you know, have you thought about the Samaritans, doing something with them?
Yeah.
Have you thought about those kinds of things? Have you thought about supporting an organisation that does that?
Yeah.
You know, as the world seems to close in on itself and get more and more inward-looking and selfish, can we do something generous?
Yeah.
Can we just give something away? Can we model a different way of living? So find a charity. I could tell you the one I work for, but you know, give, act, do something, do something wonderful.
Can we mention a charity we both worked for?
You could.
Oasis.
You want to just raise funds for the Heretic Chalk? That's all.
There's an element of that, but importantly,
right, you do Oasis, I'll do Open Doors.
Okay, well, as well as all the brilliant stuff that Oasis is always doing, and we love Oasis, of course, but they have opened a home in central London for refugee children. They're providing shelter. They're not just moaning about it and campaigning politically, though they are doing that, of course, but they're actually doing something. And you could actually do something by helping support that, because I know they still need a lot of money. You could go to the website, there's a donate now button, you can do something about it. And that, when you know that you're not just complaining and getting bitter and saying what's wrong with the world, you know that you are actively involved in making it better. It actually changes your self-image. It's a good thing. Why don't you tell us about Open Doors?
I'll tell you about Open Doors. So Open Doors is a charity I work for. Some of my time supports persecuted Christians around the world. You want to do something about people who are persecuted in countries where they live? Courageous, wonderful people. Well, Open Doors supports them around the world through giving them food and aid and through providing training, through delivery of Bibles in places where the Bible is banned, all these kind of things. opendoorsuk.org and go there. Another great charity.
And we should say, we're not just trying to promote our own stuff here. You know, going back to where you started, do the thing that you're passionate about. If you're really passionate about something, find the thing you're passionate about and get involved.
And also, I think for you and I, lest we turn into lecturing people who don't do it, we'll do it ourselves.
Yes, indeed. Always.
So I'm going to give my money this week to the Nick Page Benevolent Fund.
Yes. You can help provide Nick Page, a destitute writer, with whiskey.
Yes. This man has no malt whiskey.
Yeah.
Will he survive another wintry night? Anyway, good. Well, that's another epic one.
Listen, can I just say, I'm sorry if we didn't mention your email.
Yes,
we've had so many, and we are really grateful, and thank you so much, because there are wonderful and intelligent and great listeners, including you, Dorothy. Thank you for your emails that you've been sending in, and thank you to others that we've been hearing about, and thank you for everyone who is supporting us, and we're constantly
wonderful.
Surprised.
And, thank you very much. Do keep in contact. Lovely to hear from you. Joe, it's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you. It's been massive.
It's been huge.
It certainly has.
But those days are gone. Goodbye.
Goodbye.